This is Edwin Newman inviting you to Meet the Press with the two leaders of CORE.
Meet the Press, winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News.
Our guests today on Meet the Press are Floyd B. McKissick, National Director of CORE, and Roy Innes, Associate National Director, who will serve as Acting Director during Mr. McKissick's coming leave of absence. We'll have the first questions now from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. McKissick, at the CORE convention the other day, you were reported as saying, and I quote, "Black people have to get together as a nation. Then maybe we can sit down at a treaty table with white men." What exactly do you mean by black nationalism? Can you tell us briefly?
As briefly as possible, yes. We believe that it is time now to renegotiate the social contract between black and white people in this country. I think that we face a period in history similar to the Reconstruction period. I think we need to analyze where we are. There is no fact, and I don't think anyone would disagree, that throughout this country, black people live on the other side of the railroad track. And where they don't live on the other side of the railroad track, they live in communities such as Harlem, such as Bedford-Stuyvesant. The black communities, the white people control the white communities and in turn control the black communities too. We're saying that black people must organize to control those areas where they live.
Now, but when you speak about a black nation, do you mean a nation within our own nation with your own ruler, your own army, your own budget? What do you mean by black nationalism?
Nationalism, I think that the great confusion comes about, Mr. Spivak, because most of the time we think in geographical, in a strict geographical sense. Nationalism is a feeling that every people has undergone in order to develop. And these people undergo commonness of thoughts, ideas, commonness of culture. And you don't have to be in one geographical location, say, i.e., Oklahoma and Texas. But we are saying that there are communities throughout the United States that have never come together to use and exert themselves as a power to bring about change. Certainly, we want black communities all over. We want black mayors. We want black economists in these communities, and we want to control them rather than have white people controlling these communities. That nationalistic sense goes back to our heritage of blues. It goes back to a heritage of language, to the wearing of the natural hair, and all of the aspects of nationalism. And we believe in developing an economic thrust also.
Mr. Innes, you're going to pretty quickly take over the leadership of CORE when Mr. McKissick goes off on leave. What is your understanding of black nationalism, which has been described at your convention as a philosophy for survival? Does black nationalism to you mean complete black separatism?
Let me say that my definition of black nationalism parallels my chief's. In addition to what he has said, and to continue your question about complete separatism, do you refer to the relationship existing between the French and the German as being complete separatism? It appears to me that throughout the history of mankind, that man has always organized himself in cohesive units of self-interest. Do you consider this separatism? Do you consider complete separatism?
Well, as you look back over the history,
it will
be
separatism in the way American states in 1781 separated themselves from each other. Counties, cities, villages, townships separated themselves into distinct political units so that they can better reflect their own interests.
And you would then deal with the white community on the basis that Mr. McKissick suggested, have treaties and things of that kind?
I think that the only thing that will prevent the chaotic course, will reverse this chaotic course that we are on, blacks and whites in this country, will be a redefining of our relationship. It will mean creating a new contract. Actually, for the first time in American history, a contract between blacks and whites. The old contract did not include us, It was a contract between sub-factions within the American family. We are saying that now we must have a contract between blacks and whites.
Mr. Innes, Dr. Kenneth Clark, the Negro psychologist in his book Dark Ghetto, wrote that the black nationalist philosophy, and I quote, is rooted in hatred and despair and reflects the American racist simplifications of the importance of skin color. They preach the supremacy of blacks and the inherent degradation of the whites. Now, how do you answer that from one of your own important leaders?
I will say that it is, Dr. Kenneth Clark, to me, is an unfortunate phenomenon. It's unfortunate that a man with his training cannot be a better analyst, listen to all of the black nationalists, listen to me, listen to Floyd McKissick, and really get an understanding of the meaning of black nationalism. Look through history and understand that nationalism is a philosophy of an oppressed people trying to remove and throw off an oppressor. Will Dr. Kenneth Clark also refer to the Americans in 1774 in the same way he refers to black nationalists today?
Thank you, gentlemen.
Please remember, questions of the panel members do not necessarily reflect their own point of view. Here is our moderator, Edwin Newman.
Resuming our interview on Meet the Press, our guests are the two leaders of CORE, Floyd B. McKissick and Roy Innes. You've just met Lawrence E. Spivak. The other reporters on our panel today are Haynes Johnson of the Washington Evening Star, Robert Novak of the Chicago Sun-Times, and Bill Matney of NBC News. We'll continue the questions with Mr. Johnson.
Mr. McKissick, we're told increasingly that black people are losing faith in America, if indeed they haven't lost faith already. Do you agree with this?
I think that there is a community of thought that black people are losing faith in the ability of this country to recognize black peoples as equals, and it's an attitude that permeates the air, and I think the attitude among young people, this attitude is increasingly popular. I think the statistics would show that possibly 50% of black people in this country are under the age of 25. And this is certainly a feeling among the campuses that I have visited, and I think I took in some 73 during a school period of last year, that feeling it represents the same attitude that God is dead type of attitude that was prevalent two or three seasons ago.
Well, what do we do about this, Mr. McKissick? How do you address yourself to this problem, this attitude?
I think, first of all, I address the problems of black people. The main issue that I think that black people face in this society today is a question of black survival. It's a question of black people surviving. It's a question of black people having respect. It's a question of black people having control of their communities and the economic stability of the black community that is needed to restore faith. I think that one of the things that the country must realize, and this problem is not only a problem of black youth, but a problem of white youth too, that so many are looking at their parents and saying the principles that they teach, the principles that they espouse, are not being practiced.
There's a related question to all of this that we're talking about in attitudes, and that is the whether or not we can really have a nonviolent society. What do you think the prospects are for nonviolence in this country in this time of unusual recrimination?
Well, I think that we've coined too much behind that phrase of nonviolence. This nation has never believed in a theory of nonviolence. We're fighting a war now in Vietnam. The country was born out of a violent struggle. This country, the original 13 original colonies, fought a war to be free from Britain, to set up, and they came up with the doctrine known as the Declarations of Independence, in which they say we separate ourselves. And the 13 original colonies fought war after war to establish itself as a nation. I think inherently in this society that so long as violence is practiced on a national level, we have the H-bomb, the A-bomb, and we continue to develop mace and arsenals to deal with black people on the streets this summer. I think that it's hard for you to say that we advocate nonviolence when you're doing all of these things to make people really see that you exert your power through violence.
Mr. Novak.
Mr. Ennis, you have publicly praised Mr. Richard Nixon's black capital ownership plan, which indeed parallels Core's plan in that area, and I believe you've worked with him, or at least with his staff. Is Nixon your choice for president?
A very direct answer is no. I have no choice for president. Secondly, let me correct your question. I praise Nixon for praising Core's alternatives. And I praised Nixon when he said that black nationalism is relevant, black power is the relevant philosophy in this country. I praise those things. I praise him when he endorses Core's plan.
You will have no choice for president during the course of the year?
You see, my understanding of the power relationship in this country leads me to know that it's really irrelevant which one of these guys become president.
What would you advise the black people to do, boycott the election?
I will advise black people to register heavily, and if I have my way, not to vote. Refuse once and for all to accept the lesser of two evils.
Well, last week, you and several Republican congressmen, conservative congressmen, I would say, got together on a black capital ownership plan. Does this indicate to you, there were no Democrats involved, does this indicate that you feel that there is more hope in the Republican Party than the Democratic Party for the Negro people?
No, I will say that there is more hope among people who do not have their pet ideology about what to do for blacks. My big fight I've had since I've been in the movement have been with those so-called friends who tell me they have a solution to my problem.
And the Republicans don't tell you that?
I think that some Republicans, and I don't know all Republicans, I've worked with some Democrats, some Republicans seem to have less commitment to pass ideologies and past principles of trying to help black people.
Mr. Matney.
Mr. McKissick, if it is correct that CORE has abandoned integration, or social integration, if you will, as a viable goal, as a desirable goal, then how do you reconcile CORE's operations, financial operations, trying to build this black determination, self-determination, economic determination in the ghettos, where white financing is going to provide the base?
Well, let me answer your question by attempting to redefine or even reject part of the question that you proposed. Integration has never been the goal. It has always been a passageway in which we sought to elevate ourselves out of the magma of inequality and degradation and segregation. You understand what I'm saying? It was not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to live in a state of equality, to make up your mind, to be able to pass and do whatever you want to and have a choice to either, you know, eat at the Holiday Inn today and, you know, have you a broiled lobster. And tonight you can go down to the Chitlin' Switch restaurant on the corner, you know, and then you can have your pigtails and beans if you want to. It's a choice. And we are saying that we're dealing with what is relevant in society today. I believe I have no qualms about taking money from any source where money is available, whether it be from white liberals, white conservatives, the government of the United States, or anybody else, because somebody owes black people some money for all of the years that they have spent in developing this rich and magnificent nation of which we have not been able to participate.
But is it realistic to assume that this money from the powerful interests in this country will be money without strings, without controls attached?
Well, I can truthfully say that we haven't been getting that much money from white people in CORE. It's been black people that have been supporting CORE primarily since I've been there. So we don't have that real question. And I think this is what has educated black people to a great extent. If white people could not control them, then they refuse to give to them. And they aren't really committed to us on the basis of letting us seek and determine what we want to exercise the policy of self-determination. Their idea is that we must tell you what to do. So really, We don't have too many problems. We would love to get money from all sources, but primarily our income comes from black people now, and it's black people that made CORE since I've been head CORE.
Mr. Innes,
Mr. Matney, yeah. Question to Mr. McKissick. Have you finished with Mr. McKissick?
I'll direct this to Mr. McKissick. What is your response to Vice President Humphrey's revival of this idea of a Marshall Plan for the ghettos of America? It was mentioned a few weeks after the Detroit riots, and it was abandoned.
Well, first of all, I want to give Craig where Craig is due. I think Whitney Young was the one who originated the idea of the Marshall Plan some 4 years ago. So I want to give Whitney that credit. Secondly, many of the ideas that are being advanced today are same the ideas that advanced by CORE, but other people put names and labels on them. I think that the black man, in order to get respect in this country, has to look at himself as a national. A man can from Europe or a man from Africa can come over here and put on a turban, and he can get better respect than I can in the District of Columbia because he is from someplace else. Black people who live right in Washington cannot get that kind of respect. So my saying is that a Marshall Plan regarding us as nationals within this nation here is certainly a proper aspect or a proper approach to the problem.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Innes, Congress is now considering a stricter gun law. Do you and your organization, CORE, favor a law which would bar shipment of all guns through the mails as well as registering and licensing all gun owners?
I suspect all gun laws. I personally am against it. And I'll tell you why. If I could be guaranteed that all people in this country, blacks and whites, would be equally disarmed, and the laws would be equitably enforced, I wouldn't mind. But it would be a utopian dream for me to believe that. I know that if there are strict gun laws, that black people are going to suffer the most from this. Black people will be disarmed, and white people would not be, and we will be in a real dangerous situation.
Why do you assume that?
Well, your own report, the Civil Disorder Report, talk about white racism. If white racism is the cause of the problem in America, if white racist policemen, judges, and lawyers are going to be the one, and district attorneys are going to be the ones to enforce and regulate these statutes, how are they going to do it? We know how laws are now implemented, and we know how blacks are always left out.
Well, Mr. Innes, according to the reports we've seen, most of the people who suffer from disorder and from rioting and from crimes and from guns, those who've been the victims, have been the black people in the ghetto. Why wouldn't you be willing to take a chance of getting rid of guns and doing something about that kind of violence?
Let me say that black people suffer the effects of disorder or crime or social instability not because of black people, but because of the lack of control of our institutions. If we control the areas we live in, then we can set up our regulations to stabilize our communities. The bill that we are proposing, the bill that we got introduced into the House last week, is one that talks about stabilizing the community by giving the black community self-determination. Once we have self-determination, then we can talk about gun laws. Then we can talk about stabilizing things. Self-determination comes first. Control of our institutions comes first.
Mr. Novak.
Mr. McKissick, getting back to the question about violence, if you are repudiating nonviolence, what is the alternative? Arming for some kind of civil war?
No. The alternative is to look at what causes violence in this country. And I don't think you can coin two words, violence and nonviolence. Throw them away. What makes one man strike another? It's the same. If you treat me right, and I got a cannon at home, I have no use for that cannon. It just becomes rotten and rusty. I don't use it. It's the conditions in this society that we've got to start eradicating. In other words, you can't cure cancer with an aspirin. And I think we are trying to go about solving the problem the wrong way. If you treat me right, I'll treat you right. You give me respect, I'll give you respect. If you had 245s on your hips and I had 245s on my hips,
and we treat each other right, neither one of us would have need for guns.
Let me put it a different way, Mr. McKissick. Do you condone Negro rioting in the ghettos? Do you think that's a good thing?
First of all, let me reject the word rioting. I believe that these are rebellions, and I think we are being a little bit naive if we cannot really recognize what's happening in these communities for the true value and their true worth. So I don't call them riots.
Well, do you condone them?
Rebellions. I believe that just as white people rebelled in 1776, black people have a right to do the same in this country. I do not condone a man who's been kick, and who finally throws a rock as his tormentor. I think the way to deal with this problem is to quit kicking the man first.
Less than 4 minutes, gentlemen. Mr. Johnson.
Now, Mr. Innes, in response to a question of Mr. Novak earlier, you said it was irrelevant which one of these guys becomes president this year, and that you would advise black people not to vote this presidential election. And yet the way we achieve change traditionally in this country is through the process of politics, through the ballot. How do you expect to achieve your goals that you have outlined here on this program if you refrain from participation in politics?
You see, I disagree with you that we are refraining from participation by not voting. I think black people are really put in a box when we are told that to participate means to vote Republican or vote Democratic. Not to vote, to show a large black political potential and to force both of these parties to then respond to our programs, meaningful programs, to me is the way to get what we want.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. McKissick, in that case, wouldn't the answer be then to have, as some have suggested, and I believe CORE has suggested in the past, to have your own party, to have a black party, since you want a black nation? Are you in favor of a black political party, as SNCC recently suggested?
I'm in favor of a third political force. I'm not concerned with the name of it. But I'm concerned with organizing black people in every community in this nation to respond or be able to respond, to vote or not to vote at a given date and a given hour whenever that need arises in order to bring about change in this society that will benefit the black community.
But would it have any meaning unless you voted for a party or a man? What sense does it make
then
to register and not vote?
What we are talking about now is not the principle. The principle has been established in order to participate in the in making decisions. You do get registered to vote, so you can vote. The question of when you cast that vote and how you cast it, or if you cast it, is a matter of strategy, and black people reserve that right to themselves.
Less than 2 minutes, gentlemen. Mr. Matney.
Mr. Innes, the last public conversation I had with Mr. McKissick, he indicated that that at some point this summer he would make an appearance before possibly the platform committees of each of the political parties and make certain demands. Now, from this conversation, am I to assume that you will not appear before both conventions?
No, I don't think you should assume that at all. I think we will have dialogue with the devil if we can help us to have a better understanding of our mutual needs. And we can come to solutions that can benefit both of us. We will try to address everybody and have dialogue with everybody.
Will CORE participate in any of the planned demonstrations?
That's highly unlikely.
Why is this?
Because we have programs, we have alternatives, we think, and we want to spend all of our time and our energies trying to push these alternatives to chaos in America.
Then CORE is out of the streets.
No, CORE is not out of the street. CORE is everywhere. The CORE is not in one place either.
Mr. Johnson, 30 seconds left.
Mr. McKissick, the president has appointed a commission to investigate and study violence in this country. Do you expect anything hopeful to come from this commission?
Really, I don't. I wish it could. I wish I could give you another answer. But I think we know what the problem is. The idea is to really get with the problem and deal with it. It's just like we know that people are starving in India, but we can't see people starving in Biafra, for example.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. McKissick. Our time is up there. Thank you, Mr. McKissick and Mr. Innes, for being with us today on Meet the Press. I'll tell you about next week's guests after this message.
For a printed copy of today's interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamp, self-addressed envelope to Merkel Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013.
Next Sunday, Meet the Press will come to you from the National Governors Conference in Cincinnati. Our guests will be the chairman of the conference, Governor John A. Volpe of Massachusetts, and the host governor, James A. Rhodes of Ohio. Now, this is Edwin Newman saying goodbye for Floyd McKissick, Roy Innes, and Meet the Press.
NBC News, Second Sunday, America, the Vision, and the Violence. I'm Frank McGee, and tonight, Second Sunday, will examine violence in America. In the past 5 years, Americans have witnessed the assassination of President Kennedy, Dr. Martin Luther King, and Senator Robert Kennedy. And there have been countless other victims of violence in this country. Why? Is the degree of violence prevalent today peculiar to the United States or to this period in history? All of us are deeply concerned in finding answers to these questions. Some authorities say that the nation bears a collective guilt. You'll hear their views and others on tonight's Second Sunday, America, the Vision and the Violence on NBC Radio.
You know, talk won't overcome the hopelessness and frustration of young people stuck in a hot city with nowhere to go and nothing to do this summer. The time for talk is past. The time for deciding what kind of America we really want is here. Your help is needed now, and you can do a lot. You can hire the young people of our city, help create jobs for them, volunteer to teach new skills, help develop recreational activities and entertainment. Americans throughout the nation are responding as never before. Join them. Youth needs your help, not a lot of yak. Call the mayor's office today. This has been a message from the President's Council on Youth Opportunity. Join us each Sunday for News in the Making as the nation's top reporters put challenging questions to world leaders on Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air. This is the NBC Radio Network.